Welcome to Witta Digital's Unsupervised, a podcast series that brings you personal perspective from the front line of modern visual effects. This is a closed door session, so come on in and shut the door behind you. My name is Max, and in this episode we'll be talking about our work on Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, with Sean Walker, Visual Effects Supervisor.
My role is primarily to interface with the client, with Marvel and their team. Chris Townsend, Marvel's Visual Effects Supervisor, Destin Daniel Cratton, their director, and obviously the studio. And in general, I'm responsible for for the delivery of our shots, Weta's shots for the show. And I have to try and do all of that while not spending all of our money. That's pretty much it.
Joining him, we have Carl Rapley, animation supervisor.
Yeah, responsible for all the motion aspects on the film and working with the filmmakers and the visual effects supervisor to deliver all the aesthetic and technical requirements that go into the film and help bring it to life.
Next, we have Joe Davidson, CG supervisor.
It's my responsibility to ensure that all the CG things are delivered on time and rendered and delivered to comp to be able to hit our deadline. Also making sure that the artistic notes that Sean gives are hit to achieve the look that the client wants.
Last but not least, Sabina Lima, compositing supervisor.
I look after the comp team. I look after technical and creative aspects of anything 2D. And we're sort of the last stage of the shot before it goes out to the client.
Yeah, I may as well go through a little bit of our work just in general. Weta's worked on quite a few MCU movies throughout the years. The first one we worked on was Avengers. We only had a few portions of that, so we had Thor, Iron Man, Captain America fight scene in the forest. We did the attack on the helicarrier, that kind of thing. Mm. It was good, it was fun, and a bit of a taste of what was to come. Because it is, since then, the MCU has blown up into something pretty intense. Then we worked on Iron Man 3 for a little bit. We did the final battle for that. And it was a big one, too.
Yeah, that was my first Marvel one.
So was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
I think that might have been my first one, too, as well.
I actually remember you on that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of my first lighting lead roles as well.
Yeah. I would have been a lighting artist at the time as well, dealing with all the extremist stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. It was an interesting show.
It was cool. Then we did Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and then onto all the Avengers, Infinity War, Endgame. And
that's when I started working with you.
Yeah, exactly. The team that hasn't quit.
Yeah, no, I've been sort of stepped together since Infinity War, or was it Endgame? I guess, Infinity War. Yeah.
Endgame was my first sequence.
Yeah, and I was sequence souping on that too, so yeah.
Yeah, and then we've been on
the
show since. Yeah, no, it's been good. So we've had a fair bit of influence, I think, over the years on the MCU. Final battles for both Infinity War and Endgame, and some pivotal MCU moments with spoilers. Iron Man dying.
Yeah, we're getting our third act typecast.
Yeah, we totally are. At this point, absolutely. And then we worked on Black Widow together for a little bit.
Yes.
It was a super long show, actually. It delivered during the end of the pandemic. Sorry, the beginning of the pandemic. So we all kind of switched.
It just took a while for us to see it.
Yeah, exactly. And it just came out. And we'd finished on it like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a one, too.
Yeah, and then obviously Shang-Chi with all of you fine folk. We, again, did sort of third act battle stuff. We start Shang-Chi basically when Shang gets punched into the water by his dad. A few shots before that we deal to, but for the most part it's from then on. So we did a lot of the underwater environment stuff, the battle between the Dweller in Darkness and the dragon, the fight over on the Mountain of Souls between Chung and his dad, and yeah, just the big finale.
Yeah, and all the insane stuff.
All the insane stuff, exactly. Everything where it goes, cranks to 11.
Yep.
I guess as a fan, it's always a pleasure for me, at least, to be working on all this stuff. I've been kind of typecast into the Marvel Universe casting for Weta.
But you're like our biggest Marvel nerd as well, so.
That's true. That's... I don't know, there's some pretty big Marvel nerds at Weta. But no, yeah, I've asked to pretty much go on every show that has come through, and now I'm just giving them. I think they just have given up on not giving them to me, or you know, having me ask for them. They said, "Bugger it, just give it to them."
Yep, awesome.
I really appreciate that element of you, Sean, because your enthusiasm for the whole thing just comes across, and I think infects everyone. So it's actually a really cool thing.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it helps to be enthusiastic about the work you're digging into. A little bit of back knowledge goes a long way anyway in conversing with the client. So it's yeah, it means a lot, and I will, I think, continue to be a part of this as long as they'll have me. What about you guys? How you've all worked on Marvel films before, but how many?
I think for me, just Iron Man 3 was the only other one. So Shang-Chi was definitely my first, my first Marvel show is CG Soup. And that's a big difference, right? Because you get to see the whole client interaction as well, which is an interesting beast. But I'd say I'm not your kind of typical Marvel fan, but as soon as I saw the material on Shang-Chi, I was super excited about it because it does break out of that mold a wee bit. And just the creature designs were gorgeous, and you could just see it was going to be a fantastic bunch of sequences to work on. So, yeah, very good. I'm kind of calling it my first Marvel show, even though it technically wasn't. Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I think, the fourth one now. Yeah, Iron Man 3 was the first one, and then Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was my first comp souping gig, which was special just because for that.
It was a tough one.
It was a show. Yeah, I was good. I enjoyed it. And then, Avengers Infinity War was the next one. And same as Joe, I wouldn't call myself the typical Marvel fan or fangirl. Not really, but I think Shang-Chi has hooked me now. I'm currently in the process of watching all the Marvel movies in timeline order, which is taking me forever, but it's just now blowing my mind. All the little connections and characters show up here and there, and it makes so much more sense now.
Yeah, where are you up to at this point?
Winter Soldier, so Guardians 1 is the next one to come.
Sweet. And we've already talked about what you've
done.
Would you consider yourself a bit of a Marvel nerd?
It wasn't something I had like growing up, the comics at all. Like anything that, like, I don't, you're sort of aware of it in the peripheries, but I don't think, you know, it wasn't as maybe available as it is now. And but yeah, loving it.
Because this is Marvel's first MCU movie with an Asian solo superhero, we did start early on with Chris discussing, you know, discussing the artwork, discussing the storyline, making sure that we were respectful of all the culture and the artwork and the mythology within the film. But it wasn't particularly, you know, difficult. I think everything was kind of handled on their end. Joe, you want to go through some of the Talo build stuff?
Yeah, sure. So Talo was, it was an ingest for us from another vendor. And I always think that when you say an ingest, people think, oh, you just ingested and you're done. And it's so much harder than
just
that.
Just render.
Yeah. The amount of work that went in from, I mean, layout, models, look dev, of course, map painting as well, because those environments had to be rendered as both hero and map painting environments, was huge. And they used Houdini quite a bit and used a point cloud system to establish the location of all the bits and pieces, and then had this reference table so that you knew what each location was. And I always think of it a bit like paintless numbers. You know, you got number 5, it's a bit of grass, yeah, number 6 is a pot. But yeah, of course it's not that simple on the ground. I know that we also rebuilt a bunch of that stuff because we had a few scale issues for the action that we saw in our sequences. A bunch of the lake was effectively rebuilt and the surrounding area. And then things in the village needed to be destruction ready. So it was just an ingest. It's not quite capture the sheer amount of work that went into that.
But then you're also like matching the look of their one or they were matching the look of our one, and there was a lot of back and forth there, right?
Yeah, well, we were matching the look of theirs, but obviously their shots encompass a slightly different angle. And then we had the challenge of the plates being shot in sunny Sydney, which Sabine and Com did a huge amount of work with. But then you not only had to match to RSP's work, you had to get a very close plate match so that we could render bits and pieces of the CG environment to help Com make that stuff look like it all sat in the same world. So yeah, probably a lot more work under the surface than is originally realized.
Yeah,
talking about that, the sunny plates, they were challenging, yeah, especially because it was supposed to be all stormy and gloomy and end of the world atmosphere. And yeah, Sydney was very bright, so they put like a silk over the main characters in the foreground, but everything in the background was hard light and shadows. And we tried to retain as much of the plate as we could. We tried grading and just patching things with on-set photography, and it just didn't really work. So we ended up, yeah, like Joseph, replacing a lot of stuff, rotoring all off, repairing edges where the sun would eat through the motion blur. And yeah, it was a lot of extra work also because we had to integrate all our particles and dust and smoke and battle atmospherics. So we had to roto in between characters as well to lay all that stuff in and then grade everything overall. And we ended up changing the whole grading workflow. Basically, we had to do our own balance grades, and usually when we send comps off, those neutral grades will get inverted out, but we kept them baked in and then sort of replaced the client CDLs with our own sequence CDLs. So we had special grades for Talo, we had one grade for the Mountain of Soul, we had one for Underwater, and sort of a basic one for everything else, just trying to keep as much contrast as we could, but at the same time, yeah, matching that gloomy look. So it was, yeah, a bit of a balancing act, quite literally.
Yeah. Couldn't be on set for this one, could you, Sean?
I couldn't, it's true, yeah. Normally I would, that would be part of my role, is to go over and help guide them with our internal sort of weather practices and
any sort of problems you see.
Yeah, any problems I can foresee that would inflict significant damage to our workflows or time or budget, then I get pointed out on the day.
Yeah, you're like, don't bother shooting that. Just put a big
Just put a big screen. That's pretty much. That's pretty much.
Looks great, but we're gonna have to rotate that out. You guys must know that.
Then you'll find the on-set special effects team like freaking out, saying, "But we want to put all the smoke in here."
Yeah, and it looks. No, it looks really cool. I agree. But, yeah. Take that out.
Exactly. I've had to do that a few times.
Oh well.
When you do get to go on set, Sean, are they quite receptive if you have feedback to aid the visual effects process?
Yeah, some are not.
who's the visual effects guy?
Yeah. The first day, well, I mean, Jeff had a huge amount of respect on Black Widow, and they would constantly refer to him for how to shoot things. So there is, you know, I think Marvel and their on-set crew are pretty used to, you know, the VFX team having a bit of an impact just because their shows are so VFX heavy.
But Chris was pretty good as well, right?
He was pretty good, yeah. And even though I wasn't there, he did actually call me personally like every once in a while just to say, you know, we're doing this. Is this going to screw you over in any way? And most of the time I was like, yeah, probably.
When they've got a shot and they're showing it to us later, and they're like, "Oh, it took us like, you know, 3 hours to set this thing up, and now we have to keep this," and yeah. And you're like, "It's going to take us 2 weeks to redo that."
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly right. But no, the answer, yeah, to your question, Joe, is yeah, they do have a very conscious workflow around visual effects, just because it's going to save them money down the road if we don't have to come to them and say we're going to replace all of this with CG anyway. Did you? You didn't find out how much crazy geometry we used for the Mountain of Souls?
No, not exactly. I can go with billions. With billions, hundreds of billions of vertices. Yeah, I'm not sure.
It probably would be pretty close. Like triangulated, the beast was 128 million polygons, and that's just a beast. So.
Yeah, well, I think darkness. In a few of our simple render tests for the ground, it was like 200 million vertices. So,
so definitely, definitely hitting the billion mark, surely.
I think so, yeah.
Sounds impressive.
It does, right?
Looking impressive.
Thanks.
Sweet. Oh, yeah, underwater work. So for the underwater stuff, those were some of the first shots we got turned over. We had...
the bubbles sort of going into...
And it was because they were full CG shots and, well, kind of. They were supposed to be full CG shots. And then they filmed some plates with Simu hanging out in a lollipop rig.
Yeah, they were supposed to be full. Yeah.
And
we actually mocapped a few of those on a cushion horse thing. And
that's right.
Someone like trying to pretend to float there. But no, they shot that.
Yeah.
That was good.
It was good. It was pretty... I did some tests because I thought we've never really done underwater, I don't know what you would call it, dry for wet, like instead of day for night. We did a dry for wet testing sequence with our...
Hannah.
Yeah, with Hannah. She was our production assistant on the show. So I really wanted to be able to do it kind of properly because underwater lighting is kind of polarized. Like you don't get specular on the skin or the hair. And so I thought it would be interesting to try shooting with polarized light. And I sent the setup to Chris and he did try it, I think. he totally understood the process. He knew why it would be a good idea. And he showed it to the on-set team and they're just like, why the f*** would we light this kind of stuff in this way? Because it, they don't have the same kind of control. It looks weird, but of course it's supposed to look weird.
It's supposed to look weird, yeah.
you don't get the usual nice highlights in the eyes because you pretty much lose all of it. And so...
But even the bubbles coming out, they went through so many like iterations on like that style and like the Great Protector bubbles. And
we did. We went through quite a few iterations of what these bubbles should look like, and we hit up because they wanted it to look weird and magical, but it's still real. And so we decided to do this sort of spiral formation, and there is actually real world.
Yeah, there was crazy reference for it, right? And then it was like you started developing them in these sort of ring shapes, and then like didn't Destin see them? And then he was like, "Oh, cool! I see you using the motif of the rings as the bubbles." And, we totally did that.
Completely intentional.
<Yeah. laughs> What about this? What about the other insane water stuff we were doing?
Yeah, the water shots were definitely the biggest challenge. I really like the workflow that we came up with though, Carl, where animation provided the initial
cylinder tentacle tendril.
Yeah, because that was a great way to get early client buy-off on the kind of movement that they wanted, and then you were able to pass that to effects, and effects could use that as a base point to create their sims from. And they ended up treating the tentacles almost like individual creatures because water doesn't really do that, right?
No, it's definitely a character.
Yeah, but once we had created all those tentacles and got client buy-off on what it needed to look like, we did need to render it. And the main challenge was the memory footprint of the stuff. Just holding everything in memory just wasn't possible because you've got the water, the environment, and then these enormous creatures. It just wasn't going to happen. But lucky for us, our rendering team had developed some proprietary caching setup that we were able to get working on a show, which enabled caching out of the shading and tessellation. You can do that in parallel, so you split the memory hit across multiple machines, and then you can do your beautiful light transport on that pre-cached shaded and tessellated geometry. So thank you, rendering team.
And also the us passing stuff to you also worked the other way, because FX would do some really cool sims and then sort of down res it for us and give it back to us as a sort of a base for some of the, you know, more intense parts where the Dweller in Darkness is being held down, or some sort of, which we could then use in our subs, like animation subs submissions to the client, and say, oh, this is a rough idea of what this is going to look like. And yeah, so I think, yeah, it was kind of a mutual symbiotic relationship there.
Yeah, I feel like all that work was just an amazing collaboration. Even, you know, obviously there's a huge amount of work done in comp to get the detail enhanced on the water as well, because the sims were just huge, the scale of them was massive, but you still had to honor the detail so it looked like water, and up close and from far away. And then there's the lighting, you've got to get some light in onto this creature who's in the middle of this massive water cylinder, and yeah, just, oh my goodness, yeah, multifaceted challenge.
I mean, I saw some of the pain you guys were working through and trying to keep the action clear, but also have this insane water going on and spray, and yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you were inside that thing in real life, you wouldn't see anything.
Right? You'd just be pitch black.
Covered. But that doesn't really work in the movie context.
No.
Yeah.
Magic water.
Yeah.
So the dragon, the Great Protector, was a big one to start with. And that was the first, I think, artwork I saw for the show, like 18 months ago. And it was what hooked them into the show in the first place. Like, I had lighters coming to me really early on saying that they'd seen the dragon and they're like, I want this. I want to be able to like this thing.
Yeah, work for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that was the end of like Black Widow. You just sort of leave these, like, you leave these pieces of artwork up on the screen. Yeah. It's like, this is the next project.
That's how I.
So you don't want to come along and work with me on this one.
Yeah, that's how I lure people into the show. Just show a little pieces of artwork here and there.
I also had a compa coming to me saying, oh, he's so excited to be on the show. He has a Chinese background just because of that new Asian art.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I thought that would be a big thing. So you had a few people come around.
Just because they thought, this is new, they haven't seen this before, and it's kind of authentic. Not 100% authentic, but close enough.
Yeah. The dragon itself as well, aside from being super cool, is our first wingless one. So yeah. How did you handle that?
Oh man, we had a look at a lot of, you know, there's some films that sort of tackled that style before. So definitely a lot of artwork for that sort of wingless serpent. But yeah, finding a way that it would propel itself through the air while looking, you know, it turns really graceful and slow and, you know, beautiful, and then just like full on furious rage, and getting those two different styles. But also technically, how do you achieve that? And for an animator to pick it up and be able to, you know, use this rig in a nice organic way under, you know, time pressures so yeah, we tried various things. That was the first creature we actually tackled, and it was, yeah, really cool. We went from either we looked at like sea snakes and iguanas and swimming through the water, and that was really interesting. And also sort of this traditional ribbon dancing, which was giving such really cool shapes and flow to the creature. And then we sort of took either those sort of styles and mashed them up, or even like we looked at things like the dragon and Spirited Away even for that sort of style, and we sort of did a animation test based on that. We sent it to them and they're like, no, that's a bit insane. And we're like, okay, cool, is it a bit more like this sort of movement here? And they're like, yeah, that's feeling nice and graceful and powerful, and so we just sort of built a relationship on how this, you know, this beautiful creature would move and exist in this world, all the while, you know, sort of slowly always moving, because if it feels like it's going to stop, it's going to fall out of the air kind of thing. So it's super cool.
I can remember seeing the ribbon reference in dailies, and you were putting it forward, and I was like, how on earth are they going to make a dragon look like a ribbon? Because it looked really cool. And then I remember seeing some of the early animation tests. I was like, whoa. And it did have that feel to it, like that grace of nature. And I was like, blown away.
Oh,
I was
thank
like,
you.
Carl's good.
Oh, it's a team effort for sure. But it was also, keeping that head very intentional and focused. But then the tail could be very expressive and whip around and but also create a lot of shapes. And yeah, it was fun.
Very
it's a fun
cool.
creature.
And she was a she dragon.
She was.
I was quite proud.
Yeah.
She dragon.
We had some early reference from Chris, who said while we were building her, to add a bit of a familial tie to the dragon. So we used Father Chen's eyes as a reference. We didn't have Father Chen in any of our sequences. She plays Shang-Chi's mother, and so they sent us some reference like really early on from some of the earlier sequences, the one where she fights her husband Wen Wu, and so we use her eyes a little bit to help build and shade the eyeballs. They wanted the dragon's eye to look a little bit more human compared to the usual dragon eyes, which is kind of creepy and lizard-like.
Yeah, it's so good, that connection.
That good, yeah, a good little subtle but semi-noticeable tie to the Shang-Chi's family.
But just for like lighting it in those, there's that one shot where it's the dragon sort of pauses and looks at Zhiling, and it was really stunning. I don't know how you guys achieved that, but it looked beautiful.
Yeah, that's a funny one, because we were lighting the shots with these stormy skies with, God Grace coming through, which was actually really handy because you could highlight the characters at sort of hero moments, that shot being one of them. But I remember we got the note from the client and we hit that point where they were liking the look of it, but we got the photoreal note, like, it's beautiful, but is it photoreal? We had a chat about what we needed to do to hit that note and just kind of getting those specky hits off the dragon. And we ended up rolling out the old Wilton Bush IPL. So for anyone not at Weta, Wilton Bush is maybe half an hour drive from here, and it's this big forest, and we've got this IBL, which has been, it's HDRIs that have been shot in this environment, and it's this really contrasty light kind of filtering through the trees. And when you put it in a scene, it gives you these beautiful spec hits. So that combined with the lighting design that we'd already came up, like, we hit that photoreal note. I love it.
So you just got to shoot it in Wellington and you'll be fine.
I know. Yeah. I wonder if there's a movie at Weta that doesn't have a Wilton Bush in there somewhere.
We used it significantly on Avatar as well. It may have even been, when was it? No, because I think I used it, almost like back in, it would have been just past Waterhorse, because I think that was one of the last films that we it would have been Avatar then, because that was when we first really started to dig into HDRI lighting and spherical harmonics and all that jazz, which is now gone the way of the way of the dog, but it's stuck around all these years, decades later,
still hanging in there.
There was one thing that I, especially when it comes to look dev of shots like that, like the dragon, I as a visual effects supervisor, love just being super flexible. And so I do like to push a lot of things down the pipe to comp. So there's like tons of workflows that you use that just allow us to look dev everything from environments to characters. Do you have any tips and tricks, especially from the Mountain of Souls area?
We did quite a long phase of look dev on the Mountain of Souls. Tips and tricks, it's difficult to say. It's just the more different elements we get, the more AOVs we get, the more we can play with. And we've had a really good core team of compers on early on the show. It was just five compers, very senior and with a really good eye, artistic eye. And they, each of them took on a certain sort of angle. One was looking after the gate area, and then we had one working on the dragon shots. And yeah, and just having them have a go in the play. And I think you just have to let the artists do their thing for a little bit and then see what comes out.
You guys are doing more and more these days as well, like things that would traditionally be CG rendered. I guess it is still CG rendered, but not Manuka rendered. You guys we're kind of pushing down your end of the pipe.
Yeah, we've got this thing called Light Mixer where we just use the different light passes and mix them together quite literally and see what works best. And we can relight things and we can, yeah, we can do our own atmospherics. We can,
yeah, exactly.
We use AD a lot in Nuke, not just compass, but also effects and lighting use it. So everything's, the turnaround of elements is faster, I think, these days. That allows us, especially with Marvel shows, where the creative changes quickly and late in the game.
That's just exactly why, yeah.
A few days to just whip up a new effect or a new a look of something. Yeah, everything, a lot of it ends up in comp in the end. And I mean, for me, it's great because I get to give my two cents to everything.
Yeah.
rather than it coming as a complete package to me.
It's not quite just A over B.
Not quite. No, no. We've had to do a lot of optical things as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Just to make it, you know, look photoreal and build our own lens flares and build our own tools to, you know, match what the camera does and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's kind of typical comp work, but at the same time, it plays a lot into the final look, like. Especially with all the glows, everything glows at some point, and you know, there are different ways of tackling these.
Yeah, everything was glowing a lot more at one stage, right? And then
we went from nothing glows to everything glows, and then back to pretty much everything glows. Yeah, we had to animate things. We had to animate textures to make things glow, like all the weapons, the magic mystical weapons. We built the effect in comp and then sort of rolled it back into the shaders and also passed it on to other vendors to use in their sequences. We did the beast power up, the veins, which basically were just animated textures to start with and then rolled back into the shader. Yeah, it's a lot of things that we had our fingers in.
Yeah, absolutely.
The weapons, something as what might seem small to someone watching the film is just such a nightmare for
us. Yeah, good thing was that Chris did know that was going to be a nightmare. Like, they thought as soon as... I mean, it was a nightmare anyway, having to animate demons amongst these hundreds of people swinging at nothing.
They wouldn't stop, man. They wouldn't, like, it was like you'd get this plate turned over and it would be, yeah, like 20 or 30 extras. Like, some of the shots were reasonably static, and 20, 30 extras just going bananas, just swinging at everything. Like, well, nothing's there, but yeah, and swinging. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to have to add a demon for every single sword swing, every, like, all the bows. No one had arrows because it was too dangerous. So it was just bowstrings being pulled back and unleashed. And it's like, okay, cool. Got to add all those arrows in and something's going to die or miss or, you know, this has got to make sense. And
every one of them acting like Legolas and shooting like 20 seconds.
Yeah, I was like, someone paused for a second. But yeah, they must have been exhausted. They were amazing, like, stunt performers, but they were just like, everyone must have said action, and everyone was just going to town. And all the while, there was someone in the foreground just like calmly looking at something. And
yeah, exactly. Completely separate from the rest of the battle.
So yeah, a lot of demon deaths and attacks, and trying to make all those action scenes believable. Yeah.
Yeah. Good fun. Then we ended up with tons and tons of elements to put into one shot.
Yeah. Exactly. Sorry. Yeah.
Not trying to trump you here, but yeah, weapons and demons and hero characters and set extensions. It was just
glowing. Yep.
Everything. And in every
demons
shot.
Exploding and
yep.
That's true. You guys
and
are
layering all that in.
Yeah, exactly.
And the matchmost didn't always 100% work, so we had to end up, you know, sort of warping things into place. And
yeah, some of those late reshoots were three different plates or so trying to.
Yeah, we had one shot where we had four different plates shot at different angles and movements plus three times. Yeah, it was slightly complicated to put together, but we made it work.
Yeah, that was very tricky. And obviously, the more elements you add, especially in a battle, you guys are having to roto everything to put to lay them all in there.
Yeah, we couldn't really request roto for everything to start with. That would have been the easiest to do. But, being resource conscious, we just said, let's figure out what we need as we go. And then we just ended up having to, tweak things in comp and roto bits and pieces in comp in the end just to get a piece of, smoke behind the person, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We didn't know where the demons were going to end up, so.
That's true. You need to be faster, Carl.
Yeah.
these bloody demons with 30 tentacles, you need to animate them all.
Yeah, it did get faster. Yeah, it did get pretty tight at the end, though, didn't it? Yeah, that was challenging handling all those tentacles. Any animators out there know tentacles can be a real pain in the butt.
Not recommended. What about the foo dogs? We did a little bit. That was another shared asset, which is always fun times. But we built those ones, built them from the artwork that was delivered to us. They were a bit tricky animation-wise, right? The body proportions are a bit funky.
Body proportions were, it's got a humongous head, which just try to position that and balance it. And you're like, how is this thing going to walk without falling over its face? But it's got quite sort of a smaller back end as well, so it wasn't in proportion. It felt a little bit strange at first. But yeah, looking at those sort of, big cat lion reference, and you felt like this is like, you could see the plush toy. I don't know. you could see like, this is like a fearsome creature who's going to do a lot of damage, but also everyone's going to want one. So you could, it had, again, there's sort of that dual nature to it, and super fun.
I think it was the hairiest creature we've ever done. Like, it's 30 million hairs, and I think Kong had the like 5 or 8 million or something like that, or maybe a bit more. But I was told that I think it was the hairiest creature we've ever done. I didn't actually, was it heavy to render?
A tad, yeah.
Worth it. Every hair worth it.
I think we've been classic even just underplaying everything. It was a little bit difficult.
Yeah, we did a few optimization tests on the foo dog. Totally worth it though. It's so cool. Just had that beautiful bushy kind of, you just want to snuggle up to it. it was heavy to render.
There was a little bit of a lighting tweak that you guys, or a rendering tweak that you guys did at a certain point, which looked really cool. It was to prevent the amount of transmission on the the rim lighting. I don't know what that was in the end, but
yes,
really added a chunk of realism to it in one hit.
Yeah, it was something that one of our leads, Chantal Williams, had used on CC2, because if you light the foo dog in isolation and you have, it would probably be the IBL behind it, the light catches the fur in a certain way that isn't true to how it's going to sit in once it's comped in with the plate. And it was a way to take the plate and essentially project it so that was honored in what was behind the foo dog when you lit it. And it made a huge difference there. Suddenly it just pop, set in there how it should.
Yeah.
That was the, a note we got a lot, and it was so hard because this is humongous mythical world, and they're constantly being asked, hey, make it photoreal now. And it was just like, okay, you've got these just insane creatures going on, and you're just seeing you guys sit those creatures inside that world was very impressive.
Yeah, it was a bit of a balance for sure, and something that, again, was a big collaboration between lighting and comp, just getting the photo reel, hitting the photo reel note, but honoring those moody, kind of painterly skies. Yeah, big balancing act. And we were always getting the contrast note, eh, from Chris.
It was strange.
More contrast, which is quite... it's quite a nice thing to hear, because often CG can end up failing CG because it's overfilled. But the level of contrast that was getting pushed was more than I've seen on shows before.
Yeah. I just watched the film recently, like last week or the week before, and it's pretty contrasty. They definitely pushed it a little bit further in the DI. It was pretty extreme. It looks good. It looks very stylized in a cool way. But I think I can see what the thing is. You couldn't go that far in the DI without the information there. So I think as far as we push the contrast in our renders and our comps, if they wanted to do anything else in the DI that needed that information in the darks, then if you don't have the information there, then they wouldn't have been able to. So. Pushing that level of contrast in the DI is kind of where it needs to be.
Yeah, that's interesting that was kept towards the end. I actually still haven't seen the movie. So
it's not easy. It's not easy. It's booked out like all the time. With our current levels.
Yeah, I saw it and it was like, oh, sold out. I was like, oh my goodness, this is, I mean, the embassy, it was going to be great. And it was like 50 people when it was in there. It was like, you know, it's empty. Yeah. No, it was great to see it. No, yeah, I was like really pleased with how it held up, actually, just being separated from it for a little bit.
Yeah, it's always the case, right? Like you go, you finish on a film and then watch it a couple of months later when you've had a little bit of a break and... Generally, I mean, for pretty much every shot, I was just like blown away. I just thought, holy shit,
we did
amazing work.
But it was just, I was kind of, because we've seen a couple of early cuts before, but it was, just how it goes from not too much fantasy, you know, trying to be grounded, and then the third act stuff hits and it just sort of exponentially goes bonkers. And you're like, oh, is this going to sit all right with everyone?
I think it is. Yeah.
No, it was super fun. Like, it's just some of the most crazy action stuff I've been involved with, for sure. And super fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what we haven't talked about yet?
Is that?
Rings.
Oh, yeah. Oh man.
Oh, you know,
there's rings in this movie.
Just the title of the movie. Yeah, actually, that's another thing that comp had a massive hand in, because in the end, we did do a bunch of effects for it, but almost all the look dev and even the lightning and the and I think even Eddie was used for some of the ring effects.
Yeah, for the interactive Atmos stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rings VX started off pretty simple and just turned into something slightly bigger over time. There were different ideas of different, like, per move. Each character had a different move, which had a different ring effect and which had different colors. And we had to come up with... different looks for each of them in a fairly short amount of time. So we had a bit of a tech team of effects artists and our comp and effects link, Simone.
Yeah.
Who, set together and developed stuff. Obviously, you guys in animation had a little bit to do with that as well.
Oh, it was, I think you guys maybe bore the brunt of it, but it was, it was deceptively difficult, I thought, because you're like, okay, I've got some rings, they're not... tentacles, at least they're rigid. We had some reasonably solid posters to base our action off, but that was only the ground floor of where they wanted to go with it, really. They were like, okay, cool, so he's doing an action here and we think that's going to be a whip that changes and he's going to throw a ring. No, maybe it's a buzzsaw. No, maybe it's something else. And so you're coming up with different weapon moments and different ideas, and And yeah, but also the stunt performers were like jumping around in these sort of lollipop harness rigs, and they were doing some really, really cool stuff. And then, but we'd have to push them further, like throw them higher in the air. And so based on these sort of card rigs, we'd take their live action plane, or if it wasn't possible, we'd, you know, use a digi double to, you know, make the action just a bit bigger. Yeah, so it was surprising how many, like, how much of a process it went through. Like, even when Shang-Chi was moving his hands around, the rings had to be guided, like his hands had to lead all the actions. So it was, yeah, Destin and the filmmakers was like very specific about that, and yeah, it really sort of evolved. And but even they, like the stunt performers, came up with it on the day. And I remember Chris saying, like when these got turned over, it was like, yes, I think, you know, I'm pretty sure this is what they were doing here. and sometimes they weren't quite totally locked down on what that hand action was meaning, or so that sort of evolved as we talked about it with the filmmakers and as we progressed. Yeah, all the effects, and especially when, you know, he's blocking the rings, and Shang-Chi kicks Wenwu's arm, and just seeing what you guys did with that and how that iterated and progressed. Yeah, that was intense.
It was. There was a call like about halfway through, I think, where I think Kevin Feige said, you know, let's see what we can do to tie these to the comics a little bit, because the rings in the comics are, they're not bracelets, they're like finger rings. And each one of them has their own sort of, individual power. And I think that they probably thought it was a bit too...
Might have seen it before.
Infinity Gauntlet-ish. Yeah. So they said, let's try something a little bit different. But they wanted to honor that a little bit, which is what Sabine was saying, where they decided for a moment that they wanted to try out what each individual effect or, you know, weapon type for the rings would have a different sort of color scheme and overall look. So there was a bit of look dev, or some art ref packs that Chris sent us that had auroras for like Shang-Chi, which was a nice sort of soft effect, and
sort of meteor blasts.
Yeah, that's right. And solar flares.
Lightning.
That's the one.
Ribbons.
Yeah.
Every effect had a different color, but in the end, we ended up just sort of warm golden tones for Shang-Chi and blue. Cool for Wenwu.
Yeah. Which was good, because I think, I mean, aside from the amount of work it would have taken to you know, look dev all those unique effects for essentially a single shot or two, would have just been a bit much, and I think it was just abandoned a little bit for just because of the visual clutter was a bit much.
But yeah, it was cool seeing them, because this was during when they were filming, was sort of during worldwide pandemic lockdown mark one sort of thing, and seeing their stunt coordinator, who couldn't practice with his stunt, he's had like a little Captain America action figure and a little Stan Lee action figure, and he was composing these crazy shots just with these two action figures, and just using like little smoke effects and poses, and trying to, yeah, have his hands in like these black gloves so he couldn't see them as much, but also like just throwing these little action figures around and all these different shots, and having like paper with a cut down the middle, and sort of revealing that slowly for smoke and shaking the paper.
Yeah, they called it Toy-Viz.
Toy-Viz. It was amazing.
It was so good.
Yeah,
they did really well to be able to puppet action figures with just their hands. Yeah. Like, you could get
dramatic
from
looks
every shot. Yeah. Like, just the sudden turn of the head towards the other person was it was epic.
Yeah,
I think that was pretty clever, I thought, because you got a really good idea of what they wanted each shot to look like, and it would have taken them like a day to do that compared to, you know, weeks of previs.
That's what we do.
That's what you should do. You should set up a Toy-Biz company.
I think so. What was the most challenging part of the project?
Joey, you can start with your side.
Technically, definitely the water.
Yeah.
It goes without saying. I do think, personally, the most challenging part. So I returned to Weta in the middle of lockdown in May last year. So that was a challenge in its own right. I had two kids under five, so working from home was interesting. So I think personally for me, that was probably one of the biggest challenges, trying to find a bit of balance between family life and work, like trying to prove that the CG suit role can be done while balancing family life. And that was why it was so awesome to be working with Sabine, because we had a couple of moments, when we were back in the office.
Yeah, we had a couple of mum moments. We were like, well, oh, we're so tired.
Yeah. Or I loved it when...
6 a.m.
Yeah. I think you related to me a story about trying to get shoes on your toddler while trying to rush out the door for a client call that had been, you know, rescheduled earlier in the day, while half listening to like the production meeting that had also been moved forward in the morning. I was like, oh my God, you just described yesterday, like, for me. So that was actually a really lovely experience, and probably not one that many people at Weta get to share. So to have two female soups, and also two female soups who are trying to wrangle young kid family life, like, yeah, to we be in that together was lovely.
Guinea pigs in that sense, because it hasn't been done before, and we were approached to do it, and we were like, yeah, okay, we'll give it a go, we'll see how it goes. And I think we both underestimated it a tiny little bit.
Just a tad.
Just a tad. But yeah, we made it work in the end. And yeah, it's, like you said, same for me. Balancing work and family was the single most challenging thing on this show. Apart from that, I would say shifting timelines have been a bit challenging, just with, you know, pandemics and crew resources and us being sort of cut off from the rest of the world and not getting people in, and that side of things was a bit tricky, not being able to get the people you kind of want on the show, or need on the show, I'd say. Artistically, I think, yeah, Rings Effects was the most challenging part for comp, just simply because it's such a moving target, and, you know, client expectations don't always match with your own. What we think looks good doesn't always mean is what they want. So, yeah. Juggling that and trying to get results in a short amount of time with restricted resources was, I think, the trickiest part.
Yeah, you're right about the, as far as especially struggling with family life, this was not the easiest show to be tested on. I think, Joe, you've described it a couple of times now as, because this was your first CG Soup experience, right?
It sure was.
It was very much a baptism of fire, is what you described. Yeah.
Or a baptism of water, maybe.
And yeah, I mean, we delivered a crazy film, a crazy good film in one of the craziest production schedules that we've had to do as well. Like, a Marvel show is usually a short burst of, you know, energy. Something like, you have 8 months to do the show, and I don't know, four of it's pretty intense, but this was like an 18-month show, and a year of it was intense. It was absolutely a challenge, production-wise. The release date was delayed a couple of times, and so we just bore the brunt of that. And we wanted to, it was Destin Daniel Cretton's first MCU movie. He was the director of the film, and we wanted to give him a good experience with us, and you know, this was his first visual effects film as well. So I think we may have provided some unrealistic expectations for him going forward, but in general, he was really, really happy with us. Like, by the end of it, he was stoked that he was able to make all the changes he wanted right up to the last second. Yeah, it was good.
He said he wanted to marry one of our effects.
Yeah, he did. That was the one that we threw the end credit scene. Yeah, we put two compers. It was one of those real tricky ones where it was late in the day. The end credit sequence kind of came to us, and they wanted a unique effect. And, you know, it was after a few iterations, it wasn't really quite hitting the mark internally. I thought we were just... it was just a difficult thing to conceptualize. And then we just kind of put two compers and two effects artists together. So we had Claude, our effects supervisor, Daniel, Simone, and Ja. Yeah, and just put them all together, and 4 days later they had this crazy effect that we sent them. They loved instantly, and yeah, Destin said he wanted to marry it. So it was a very good moment for me, I thought. It was one of my favorite moments, I should say, throughout the whole film, just having something come together so well and just trusting your artists to do their thing.
Yeah, I think for me it was, yeah, like, I think just echoing what you guys were saying, it was, yeah, I think Sean and me both spent 18 months on this project, but it was a long, drawn out intensity. So, yeah, and the first because of various things, I spent I was the only basically animator on for the first 4 months. And it was just trying to seeing the insane scope of this show, and also all the creatures and how we're going to do this and how we're going to tackle this, and just from my spare bedroom with the bed pushed up against the wall and doing Marvel client calls with, and looked like I was in an insane asylum because the bed had this pattern where it was just like I was in a padded cell. Yeah, so that was just a challenging experience all around, just to start like that with the scope and the challenge that we knew was coming, and try and lay the tracks for the rest of the team as they got onboarded. We had amazing animation and production team, crowds and motion edit and mocap, and it was a massive team effort, and couldn't have done it without them all.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much echoing what Joe was saying early on. I think my favorite part of the whole show was just the people. You know, it was a long one, and everyone really kept a positive attitude throughout the whole thing, and it's something that could drive, you know, people crazy, and maybe a few people did go a little bit crazy, but it was still upbeat the whole time, and you know, I'm really, really proud of the work and proud of the people. Like, it was a really good experience, I think, throughout. It was cool.
It's because you stayed smiling the whole time.
What else can you do? Things go pretty fast if you don't. Yeah, especially on a show like this. Yeah, no, it's good though. I think it doesn't really matter what the work is in the end. Like, if you have the right people, it's what really makes a show, I think.
Yeah.
Big thank you literally to everyone who worked on the show. There were so many hands involved. I would be remiss to not give a special thank you to Simone Riccinelli, who really helped out with the look development on so many aspects of the show, and he was a super big help to us.
Matthew Brunton in production was like my right hand and helped me guide through all this craziness. Couldn't have done it without him. And animation sequence supervisor Sebastian Trujillo, and lead animator Merlin Maritz, but also lead creatures artist Tim Forbes, and one of our lead crowd artist Greg Wilton. Just all those people basically just got me through some really tricky times and took on a lot of responsibility, and super appreciate it.
A big thank you from me. I think Carl's covered most of the pre-pro departments, but Rob in layout and Marie in map painting did absolutely beautiful work. Obviously the whole of the lighting team, two leads, Ross and Chantel, big thanks to them. And I have to do a shout out to Glenn Sherrar, who was my mentor for this show. I learned a huge amount from him. He's a wonderful man. Thank you, Glenn.
I want to thank the whole comp team, which grew from 5 people to over 40 people. Everyone did an amazing job. They bore the brunt of the crazy at the end, and they still hung in there and gave their all. Special thanks to my leads, Owen Longstaff and Nathan Abbott, and again Simone, who also helped me a lot and helped us a lot, bridging various disciplines.
Big thank you to Richard Thwaites, who was our producer for the show. He started, this was his first show at Weta. He handled it like a champ. Yeah, no, he really helped with the client side of things more than I could have expected.
Love you, Richard.
Love you, Richard.
You've been listening to Sean, Carl, Joe, and Sabina on Wedder FX's Unsupervised, a Studio 801 production. This episode was recorded at Tyre Studios and was edited by me, Maxwell Barrett, and produced by Jordan James Maxwell. Dave Gouget is our executive producer. Next time, we'll be discussing our work on Marvel Studios' Eternals. Thanks for listening.